Well, there was a – it's a verb because like there – we had a the little selection box in Levelhead, for example. And I was like, is this too thin? It's kind of hard to see. You know,
it's being thickened.
Yeah. So I sort of I put a message to say, I was like, I need you to infatten the
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 242 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm average height.
I'm Sam, and I'm making levels.
Yeah, this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is January 16th, 2020.
Yes.
Before we get started, we have some good news. We're going to be swearing on this show.
Yes.
There's going to be profanity, so...
time to celebrate.
Get ready. Also, we'd like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. Thank you all very much for your contributions to help keep our microphone juices flowing. Now, here's the deal. It's been 77 hours since we started recording the last episode. Somehow, it feels like nothing has happened, even though everything has happened.
But it also feels like it's been months.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a long time.
So here's – we're at it. We're in an odd phase in Levelhead's development. We are not jam-packing a lot of new features into the game. We're basically like
– a lot of small features.
Yeah. We're tidying up a lot of loose ends. And unfortunately, some of our ends are really loose.
And they have more ends dangling off of them.
Yeah, it's almost like a fractal end.
It's a fractal.
The closer you look at it, the more ends there are.
Yeah. They're all so loose.
Yeah.
So right now I'm working on the multi-select tool, which I have now spoken about, as you may recall, multiple podcast episodes, two prior episodes and this one now. Started it in December. Why is this such a big deal? All it is selecting multiple things.
Yeah. I mean, you could already select one thing. Like what's the big deal?
Another one? Except you can't. So – Multi-select as a concept is just like select some stuff and then move it around or copy it or paste it or whatever or delete it or right? Mm-hmm. Because it turns out there's actually a lot of different ways that this can interact with things, and nothing about the code for the editor was built with this concept in mind. So it's been like a week of optimization, debugging edge cases, and then multi-select got to a point where we're like, okay, it's working pretty good. And then the next phase was we want to try to do something with paths in Levelhead. So you can select multiple path nodes and move those around.
Paths are the things that you can put stuff on and then they move around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Sam and I specced it out and we came up with some ideas for it.
Pretty simple rules.
It's very simple. Very simple stuff. Yeah, like when you look at it, you're like,
yeah. Simple to say.
When you do this, this should happen. Yep. It's like, oh, obviously. Yep. So I sit down to do it. I'm looking through the code. Yes, started yesterday morning. And I'm just like, there is no way to do this without completely ripping out every single thing that relates to path editing and rebuild it all from scratch. So I'm doing that.
Yep.
So
nice.
So I was telling Sam yesterday, I was like, at the end of the day, I reached a point after 8 hours of grinding away at this thing. I reached a point where the game looked and functioned literally exactly the same way it did at the beginning of the day. Uh-huh. So again, working a lot feels like nothing has happened because it's all behind the scenes. So that's kind of where we're at. Sam, you're working on a bunch of new campaign levels.
Yeah, so there's originally I wanted – for some arbitrary reason, I was like, we need 100 levels.
I mean, not arbitrary. It sounds good.
It sounds good, right? But then I was like – who gives a shit? We just need a lot of good levels.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
And
so
whatever we get, we just need to then when we market it, we need you to say over and then one minus that.
Yep.
Which is over 96 levels.
Or even better, at least, and then you can use the highest level.
up to 340 yep. levels.
Now, at least is better because like at least could be any number above that. Up to is only up to.
Yeah, I did like our Crashlands move, which said that we have – over 27 recipes, but on screen it was like 400. We had 420. Yep.
Yeah, we could do the same thing and just have our words be the truth and the screen be the lie.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? There
you
go.
Yeah. As long as something is true, nobody can get us.
So I've been concentrating on is, you know, I played a lot of levels from the community spotlights and just from watching players build stuff. And people do – there's a couple of sort of categories of levels specifically that don't exist in the campaign yet. And so one of those is sort of the adventure style, basically the old school Zelda style level where it's one screen at a time. You move between screens and you're sort of
kind of feels like Metroid.
And so while I've made some levels that are Metroidvania-esque and you have to go over there to get this thing to allow you to get over there, this one is actually specifically designed with that sort of camera style. And so that one's actually wrapped up and should be deployed in this current patch. And that was just sort of smack in the middle of the whole campaign. It's called Crypt of the Watcher. It's a good one. It'll be really fun. But I think basically what I'm trying to do is I went from saying like, oh, I need to make a whole level out of all these little individual pieces to saying, okay, let's actually batch all of these pieces together and do some really cool higher sort of concept level pieces that end up. Really what I want to do is continue to use the campaign, not just to educate people about like the different elements of Levelhead, but actually to sort of blow their minds about what's possible, right? And in the same way
to build
in the same way that the community has actually done that for us. Right. And so it's sort of this really fun reflection thing.
Yeah, we just saw one today too, that we had to stare at for a while and be like, what is even
like, this is our game. We made the game. Yeah. We're looking at stuff. We're like, what mechanic is this? Yeah.
And so there's a lot
somebody
of
made a new mechanic out of the mechanics.
Yeah. Yep. And so there's a lot of that stuff. And also there's the basic high concept I'm going for, that adventure dungeon thing, which is already done. A troll level.
Yes.
Which I'm working on currently. Turns out trap or troll levels are actually much harder to make.
It's a particular kind of troll level though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because often when you hear troll level, you just think of one that's just designed to make you mad, and that's its purpose, right? But like is there a name for the
I'd trap say adventure? It's trap adventure is basically
a good troll level makes you laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Like it's.
But people seem to think that it's designed that a good one makes you angry.
No, it's not supposed to like, oh, I've trapped you into an unwinnable situation. Ha ha.
Right.
Yeah. That's not great. Yeah.
So we have one creator named Seffy who's had some previous trap adventure style levels.
Yeah, they're very fun.
Absolutely hysterical. And so I wanted to actually try one of those, like pull it into the campaign, show people that this is a thing you can do.
And the way that those are supposed to work is that the creator of the level puts an enormous amount of work in trying to figure out what is the player going to want to do, or how do I get them to do what I want them to do either way, right? And then how do I make sure that the thing that they were just definitely do in the scenario is going to harm them in some way.
Right?
And then they have to do things that make absolutely no sense.
Still make enough sense that you can figure out what to do when you get stymied the first time. So the idea is that your first attempt should always fail.
Basically, right?
But your second attempt should be fairly clear, the next thing you should try to do.
And so, it's been really fun to work on that one, but it's been 3 hours deep, and I'm like, it takes so long because actually everything is a contraption at that point it's basically deception. The whole level is just deception, right? So that one's really fun. And then I have two other ones, one of which is sort of a larger scale adventure-y feeling thing, which would be probably kind of like the capstone level for the whole game. So I boiled down basically these 15 level concepts or 15 level pieces into 4 high level concepts. And those are really what I'm focusing on. And really just putting a lot into each one of those. So there's these really kind of standout pieces throughout the campaign. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Woo!
Rad. It's a lot.
Yeah, I'm working on a sandbox server, which is, I don't know if it's cooler or less cool than it sounds. I think it just depends on what sandbox means to you and your brand, But
well, I think the problem that you're trying to solve is a cool one.
Yeah, which is basically, we're going to launch this game. We don't know how many people will play it.
Hopefully a lot.
Hopefully a lot.
Or 7 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be anything because we're sim shipping on mobile and we don't know it. We haven't actually talked about what monetization will look like there and all that kind of stuff. So who knows what that's going to look like. But let's just assume it's a free-to-play title for the
sake of. We're going to try to hit whatever gets us a shitload of people.
Yeah.
That's kind of our angle.
So whatever's going to happen, so let's assume it's free-to-play. And now we've got Xbox Game Pass, which is basically free-to-play also.
Subscription,
And so now out of the gate, we've potentially, if things go well, we have a really incredibly large number of people coming in on day one to play this game, especially since we're sim shipping. So there's no like – we don't have a week to recover and then launch the next platform. Right. It's going to happen all at once. So we may have anywhere between, like the little trickle we have now, which is actually still, I can't remember what the numbers are, but we're still getting, hundreds of requests to the server per minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're operating at this tiny, tiny scale right now. And then when we launch,
it's going to go up literally by 10,000 times.
Probably. Yeah. Right. But it's going to be, it's definitely going to be way more. But the question is it going to be 10,000 times more?
Right. Or 100 times? 10 times?
So instead of, trying to answer that question, we just need to basically really create some scenarios where we just say, what will happen if it's a million times more?
Because now the idea is with modern web tech, you can basically automate things so that they can scale themselves, right? Yep. As long as their design allows for that without something really terrible happening. So I've designed everything, as far as I know, in a way that allows for that, right? But I haven't gotten to see if that's actually true. So like, I don't,
you only know as far as the player base we have is
right.
actually true.
That's the only test that's happened against it. But the system is designed so that if it gets under too much load, it just multiplies itself. But will it? How long will that take?
Yeah.
And are there limits? Like, is there some limit where if the current database setup we have hits 3 million records in like a sort of like, will that just cause the thing to stop responding? Like, I just have no idea what's going to happen. So,
well, the fun part about this is it's exactly the same kind of thing that I'm dealing with, which is once you've done this, once you've built this sandbox, created an army of robots.
Because that's the next step, right? The next step is now simulate players against it, but I need to get them as close to possible as acting like real players. So, because I need to be able to test the real world use case, right?
They need to be like logging in and out.
They need to upload levels. They need to do the whole thing.
Change their aliases.
Yep. And I need to test it then at multiple scales and see what happens. So it's going to be wild.
And the thing is, once you've done that, you've done nothing.
Yeah.
In the sense that all we've done is found some things out.
Yep.
So you're going to do all this work.
And hopefully discover I don't have to do anything at all. Everything's great.
Yeah. But what's really going to happen, what's really going to happen is you're going to come out of it with a list of things that you need to fix.
Yep.
And even worse is once you fix those things, nobody will notice.
Yeah.
Because everything will work
the same.
Exactly the same as it currently does.
Just more stable and more scalable.
More stable.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're in that kind of weird phase of development, which is it's that one that kind of like it's always there right before a launch, which is you really have to get into the grunt work of the game of just like tightening up things, optimizing, fixing bugs.
Just finishing everything out, basically.
Yeah, getting in those like last sort of like polish points or those missing features that kind of like mean a lot to the overall health of the game. So something like this multi-select. And so I don't know. I feel like this area of game development can be kind of demoralizing if you're a solo developer because it feels like you can just never quite see the end.
Yeah. Yep.
You know? But it's coming. Mm-hmm. We don't have a specific launch date yet still, but we're getting there. So otherwise, tomorrow we're working from home because we're about to be covered in
blizzarded.
Yeah, we're going to be entombed in ice.
Entombed in ice is
also
more word-like.
I want to say I love the wordplay of putting en in front of something to turn it into a verb.
Yeah,
like I needed there was like
or is it an adjective into an adjective?
Well, there was it's a verb because like we had the little selection box in Levelhead, for example, and I was like, is this too thin? It's kind of hard to see, you know,
when you're thickened.
Yeah, so I said, I put a message to say, I was like, I need you to infatten the
It's like embiggening, right?
Same thing. And it's like, and you know exactly what it means. I need you to embiggen this. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, so you need me to make it bigger.
How do you choose between N and M?
I think just whatever feels good.
Yeah.
What is? I think M generally is when you need something more. M is the prefix that means more on a thing.
Okay.
N is to convert it into something else. Right? I guess you want infatten. Yeah, that works too. But
infatten this. I think it's just whatever. It's kind of like a versus an. Right? Like it's just kind of
– Yeah, there's a rule there, but it's actually like vibe. How you say it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So every time I hear somebody put an human, which is like –
Oh yes, right. The British person.
Yeah, it's like the right
and historical woman. Achievement.
I do not like that at all.
Yeah. So there's other stuff you could do. You could like in booking your ideas.
Ooh,
you
know?
Is that writing them
where
down?
That's where you turn it into a book.
Oh, you
know? Specifically a book though. Yeah.
Yeah.
And booking.
In booking them. Anyway, so we're working from home tomorrow. We're gonna be entombed in ice.
Yep.
And it's a blendy Friday. It's a blendy Friday, blendy icy Friday.
It's sort of a smoothie.
Move a smoothie.
It's
a blendy
smoothie.
It's a frap.
So given that we're all buried by odd jobs and that we're about to be entombed.
Slaps only.
Slappers only.
Slappers only.
Odd jobs. We're just gonna hit questions really hard this time around.
Let's do it.
So these questions come from our listeners over at podcast.beesguys.net. Top question comes from Gabe, who's on a roll lately, I'll say. Gabe says, what was the biggest mistake you guys have made as a studio, and what did you learn from it?
Oof.
Really just
getting in, really
digging
right,
deep.
Getting right in there.
The biggest mistake.
We need to be able to find all our mistakes and sort them by bigness.
By bigness.
We need to insort
them. So we got a few. So one of them was the one that was the most costly, but also the most educational, was scaling up double right after we launched Crashlands.
Yes.
Because at the time, our logic was, we've made some money. In order to be successful, we need to add more people. And
well, it was there are certain things that it's hard to do.
Yeah. So if we add more people, those things
then
will be easier.
People can help us do those things.
Yeah. Yeah. But we did that without having the right – we didn't have the right combination of attitude towards management, mm-hmm. understanding of what we were doing and why in terms of like why did we hire people, yep. right?
And production.
And then
and
the production yeah. and then personnel. We didn't, yeah. like, the combination we had was not – could not possibly have worked out yeah. basically. And then it took us basically a year and a half or 2 years to like actually just realize that it wasn't, we were trying to dig ourselves out of it the whole time. But it was a situation that was not something that could have been resolved because it was basically just broken from the get go.
Yeah. And of course,
so that was definitely our most costly mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By a lot.
Yeah. We also had another great one, which we have talked about in the past, which was our Quadrupus.
Yep.
iOS postponement.
Yep.
So that was just like we had a bug or something that got us rejected on – or it was a policy thing
yeah.
on the iOS App Store. Got rejected. Went ahead and just published it on Android anyway. yep. So – and then we just put out a message on Twitter or something like, hey, sorry guys. Like Quadrupus will come out on iOS whenever it gets mm-hmm. approved. And apparently we were – potentially going to get some kind of feature treatment or something. Like it was on the radar.
But without a sim ship, not going to happen.
Yeah. So now all of a sudden we're an Android first studio, mm-hmm. which
means
justifiably Apple isn't pumped about.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those things too. It's like, had that actually worked out, because that's still the only free-to-play title we've made that was even decently monetized. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's possible that had we actually like gotten that feature treatment,
yeah, that would have been a completely different trajectory.
It would have changed the entire trajectory.
And
that was
like 100%. Month six
yeah.
of the studio's yep. life. Yeah,
we may have actually hit a success point there instead of not.
Instead of 2 years later, right? Yeah.
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 So that's
fascinating.
That's pretty big one.
Yeah. And then I think generally, you know, in 2017, we did a lot of unusual things. Like we made and scrapped a lot of games.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them were mistakes. I think they were all very educational. But we did try to completely change our production process at various points, but without actually understanding our production process.
Yeah. Well, I think we were doing that thing where you can tell that there are improvements that could be made. But
just because you can feel like things are hard
yeah,
to do.
Yeah. But sort of what it feels like is almost like trying on like other people's armor, basically. We're like, oh, I'll just take that, put that on. And you're like, I don't know how to actually move in this. I don't know how to
operate. Well, we did a lot of looking around at other studios, and we're like, well, like AAA studios, like they're making big, huge stuff. And like they do this thing called pre-production where they spend like a whole year mm-hmm. planning out what this game is going to be and what the story is. And they have like reams of paper of yep. concept sketches and stuff. And we're like, we've never done any of that. Let's do all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, so we started – changing those things just to kind of experiment with it and see how it would go, but we didn't have a good enough reason to do those things other than that other people were doing it. Those people were doing well, so there must be some kind of special sauce.
I think the reality again was that our production problems at the time were so apparent in terms of the problems they were causing that it wouldn't have mattered what attempts we made at adopting, whether it was, you know, any one of these things, I think, until we actually understood what was happening on a production level, where it's like everyone just needs to know what work's getting done and who's doing what specifically. It's sort of like the core of it.
Yeah.
Until that's actually there, it doesn't matter what you try to do with pre-production, even regular production, everything like that, just kind of falls apart.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. So I've been working on my DevOps talk for GDC. And a big part of that talk is basically coming up with ways to visually convey to the audience through like flow charts and stuff, mm-hmm. What was happening in our studio at various points. Because basically the first third of my talk is talking about all the ways that we did things wrong, like really, really wrong. And then later you can see those same processes morph visually into a clearly better, smoother, more automated process with like testing built in and stuff like right. that. And of course, like it's so obvious in retrospect when you know how to test things and when you know how to identify bottlenecks and when you know how to spot those production problems, you can just see it. Like if somebody said like, here's what our art pipeline looks like and just handed you our original flowchart, you'd be like, what is this garbage?
Yeah.
But if you don't have the vocabulary for that, if you haven't sort of talked mm-hmm. through those kinds of things, then it's very non-obvious actually.
You need to be able to name things.
Yeah.
Things need names.
Yep. They're demons. You have to know their name in order to That's trap true. Them and gain power.
You have to know their true name. Yeah. If you can speak their true name, you own them.
Yes. Now. In order to entrap them.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would also say, I never get on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Except for I have a Todoist reminder. There's this one guy from my from my MBA days. And my last communication with him was I was like, I'll see you on Facebook in 5 years. So I added a Todoist reminder for 5 years from then to send him a message on Facebook. And I did.
Mm-hmm.
This was 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that conversation, I was like, all right, I'll see you again in a few years. So I added another Todoist reminder for 3 years from then. So basically, I log into Facebook just to send this guy a message every few years, basically as a joke. So mm-hmm. today was my day.
Oh.
I sent him my message. I'm not going to actually log in to check if he responded. So I guess, you know,
we'll see in 3 years.
but I saw, trust me, I'm going somewhere with this.
All right, I'm on this train.
I saw a post from an old friend of mine that said, I wonder how many of the things I think I know that I'm wrong about. And I was like, nice. Hmm. And then he said, my guess is about 5%. And then somebody was like, 5%? Where'd you get that number? And then he responded, well, I don't know. It might be 10. I was like,
where'd you get that
what?
Number?
Yeah. So I did drop a response and I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm at 100. Because we're all at 100, right?
We're all at 100
like,
all the
we're
time.
All some, we're all at least somewhat wrong about some of the things that we're doing at any given
You're
time.
You're at least a little wrong about everything because we can't know the absolute truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Nothing is real.
Nothing is real. Know? I mean, things are real. It's just our perception of those things is imaginary.
Yes.
That's the fascinating thing about this idea of making a poor decision or like one of our biggest mistakes, right? Because
you can only do the best that you can at the time.
Also, we don't know.
Yeah.
And we won't know until further down the road. And some of the worst mistakes we've made, we probably actually don't know about.
Yeah.
Because we're on such a different path from wherever that was, whatever that may have taken us to.
Yeah. And we'll never know, right? Because it's a difference of paths. Because we could, like, today we could be, you know, who knows, like, had we made one slightly different decision, you know, mm-hmm. 5 years ago, maybe we would own this office building that we're renting right mm-hmm. now, right? I mean, by renting, I mean renting a room inside of. You can't know that. There's some that you can look back and be like, and you can just tell that you fucked something up.
Yes.
Right?
Or maybe you'll even hear about it from maybe somebody else who was involved in it. They're like, I was about to do this for you, and then you did this other thing, and then I decided not to help you or whatever. Then you know. But then there's stuff like what if a business deal comes in and you think you negotiated it pretty good. Then you later learn some stuff and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, that could have been a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could have done so much better had we just asked, you know, or whatever. Like if they had sent one more email and you never know.
But the crucial point there is up until that point in time, that later point in time where you realize something, you're operating generally as if you haven't made a mistake in that particular arena, right?
Yeah.
So those are the ones that I think are the most comical because – The thing is, we do enough stuff. It's just a fact. We do enough stuff and we work with enough partners. We have enough external facing stuff going on that there's a lot of these points at which, whether by decision or just for an input, whatever else, that something could easily just go sideways.
Yeah. Well, especially when so much of our success hinges on our personal relationships with people at the different platforms, right? which, and it's literally like one-on-one communication. So if you just, if you're just like, if you see them somewhere and like, and then you don't recognize them in that moment, or like you forget their name, or you just like walk by and like, they're trying to get, you know, like there's other things that can just like dampen their opinion of you a little bit, which is like a harmless thing that basically dampens their opinion. And over time it can just get more and more sour because like somebody interpreted something wrong or whatever. And if that happens, like you won't even know it. Right? Yeah. And then just like, just like someday we'll reach out to the, as to with our any partner relationship. And they'll be like, and they'll be like, fuck you. We're not going to do that.
Except probably not that explicit, but
no, it mostly just won't answer.
So we've made a lot of mistakes. We're probably making tons of mistakes
just huge
all the time. That's just the way it is. You just got to keep moving. Keep
the swimming. Goal is to stay alive long enough to realize how bad you fucked everything up. Right.
To realize some of the ways in which you fucked up.
Yes. I just had a weird deja vu moment. I feel like if we,
did we just split the universe or something? Something happened?
Oh,
what?
Wait. Did I talk to you guys about the universe splitter?
No.
Maybe.
Okay. I need to bring this up because I think it's fascinating and I want to know you guys' opinion of it.
The universe splitter.
Okay. And also because I'm pretty sure Adam's going to be like, this is bullshit. So, all right. This American Life, great radio show. Mm-hmm. They talked about quantum particles and that mathematically it's believed that they are going two directions at once. That's like apparently how,
that's how they do.
It's the only way that it would make sense for them to exist somehow based on the math. It's like they have to be going in multiple directions simultaneously. But when they get measured, like in terms of people actually figuring out like where is it, where did it go, or whatever.
It's the uncertainty principle.
It's only ever in one place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was going two places, but it's only in one place, what about the other place, right? And so so this is what where people take the idea of parallel universes, which is quantum particles do go in two places. They just go into parallel universes. Hmm.
Do they only go into two places at once or infinitely many
apparently
places at
two.
Once?
Okay.
Which is just one other parallel universe.
Mm-hmm. But there are infinite other parallel universes. And there's a question. This is what the theory. So the question is like, if every time a quantum particle moves, does it just create a parallel universe where in one universe that particle went right and the other universe that particle went left?
They're very powerful.
It turns out it's like basically free to create a universe. It's very scalable.
Apparently. I mean, it would have to be because like the scale required, right?
Well, but the scale
think
required.
Think about the sheer number of, because we're talking quantum particles, right?
Right.
So the sheer – because this is happening presumably at the smallest length of time, right? Which is
– yeah,
all the time. Thing called? It's like a
– yeah, the pico? The pico?
No, no. I mean like smallest – it's a Planck –
a Planck number.
Planck second. I don't know what it's called.
A Planck minute.
Which is –
that's when you Planck like, for a whole minute.
It's the idea that time is never continuous. It goes in steps according to Planck – the Planck time, right? So – but then presumably that every single – tick of the universe, then these things could go either way. And what this is saying is that they actually go both.
They go both. And just every time they do that, a new universe
that
is
means
created.
That every – think about the both? Sheer number because once you start talking about that, then like
– it's infinite.
Then who – no, but it's infinite in because infinity, one of the things that's fun about it is it actually has degrees, right? It's like if you're doing math stuff –
just
like,
how infinite.
It's like how infinite is it? The sheer
– very.
The sheer amount of infiniteness of this idea.
It's way more infinite than most infinite things we would normally encounter.
It's probably maximally
infinite.
It's
probably the most infinite thing that there is. Now, okay.
Easily.
Now, let me reel this back into the –
because the question is like, who gives a shit? I guess
this is – well, this is why you should give a shit.
Okay.
So given that this is clearly what's really happening, is that parallel universes are constantly being generated infinitely, okay? So this research university, can't remember which one it was, but go listen to American Life if you want to know. They made an app called Universe Splitter. And in this app, you say like you write down two decisions that you're like trying to choose between. Like in the case of the show, it's like, do I grow my beard or do I shave it off, right? Then you hit send. It sends your question over to this university, and they measure a quantum particle. Okay,
and they measure a
quantum. So if the quantum particle goes left, then you are in the universe where you chose the first thing. If it goes right, then you're in the universe where you chose the second thing, because the idea is that if the one particle goes both directions, then there is now you've now. Split the universe where there's now two of you, where one of you got one outcome of the particle and the other version of you got the other outcome of that same particle.
How would that impact whether you shaved your face?
Because you do what it says.
You're supposed to do,
what it says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't, then you're, you know. But then probably the other universe also didn't do
it. So how is this any different than the fact that in a single tick of the universe, you just already became infinitely many other people, right? Mm-hmm. And probably one of them also shaved their face.
Well, this one's a lot more measurable, you know? Mm-hmm. But so if you say, like, for lunch today, do I want pizza or cotton candy? Which is, as I'm sure, how most of us decide. Then now you can, whichever one you pick, you can split the universe and know that out there, definitely, another version of you is enjoying the other thing.
But that's just already true though, because the sheer amount of, because this is the thing that this is why I don't care, because the sheer volume of infinity involved in this thing.
I'm dying.
That's been happening.
I got it.
Since the beginning of time.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep.
Since the beginning of time, every tick of the universal clock has spawned
infinite
universe. The most insanely infinite number of other universes this whole time, right? And it's been branching ever since, right? Uh-huh. So if that's true, then literally anything you can imagine, no matter how insane.
Well, this is basically Rick and Morty.
Exactly. Right? Like, it's happening somewhere.
Which does have a level of nihilism in it. Where, like, there are some episodes of that show where they actually, like, die.
Yeah. Or whatever. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they just, like, well, we'll just, and they'll accidentally kill versions of themselves from another universe or completely destroy one universe, and they just hop over into an adjacent universe and, like, replace themselves.
Mm-hmm. But in that case, who would care? Because universes are free.
Exactly.
Right.
And then, so the question is, who needs this many universes? Who is behind this? What is their deal?
I mean, the answer is always money, you know?
It makes more money this way.
Someone is making money.
That is true. If you're constantly generating infinite universes, that's a lot of money.
It's got to be worth something.
No, but it isn't, though, because the amount of inflation – because, again, the amount of infinity here is stupid.
Yeah.
So it's like money. Like it's infinitely – it's not only infinite. It's also every moment creates infinity more, right?
Sure.
So the amount of growth is just like you can't, like, a dollar in one tick of the clock is worth now one infinitieth of a dollar.
It's all, like you said, some infinities are larger than others,
but this is clearly the biggest one.
Well, no, because all that there needs to be is just one more thing that's a bigger infinity than this one, and now your currency can be used, you know,
in that context. But if you can now represent that thing in our universe, then you can now have infinite versions of that again. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's true.
So, like,
that's true. So, I guess
the fractal loose end.
Fractal loose end.
All right. Next question comes from Captain Jazz, who says, "People like to ask which of your five senses, or six, if you're one of those people."
I mean, I do want to keep my proprioception.
Yeah, as we say, you have far more than five senses.
Which one is that's your ability?
To know where your body is.
Yeah, to know where your body is in space. It's like to close your eyes and move your arm somewhere and know where it's going to be, you know?
Oh.
Like not exactly necessarily, but like knowing that your arm is up versus down. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good one to have.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, which sense would you like to lose or prefer to lose? Not like it's not a threat.
Dang, Captain Jazz.
If we got to include all senses, I would just take pain away.
Mm.
I can just choose one to remove.
But there are those people who have that.
I know. Like, it's also bad. Just die. It's also dangerous. I know that.
The sense I want to remove.
I think I'd rather have that danger than most of the
thing. Adam already has lost a sense, which is the ability to imagine inside of his own mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I didn't lose it. I never had it. So I don't know what it would be like to have it, you know?
What about that sense where when you're carrying a heavy box and your nose itches? I want to get rid of that.
Yeah. Itching.
Itching.
Sense. That's a terrible one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, like, okay, how often when something itches on your body,
do you really need to scratch
it? And then you scratch it and you're like, problem solved.
Thank God I did that.
Pretty much never. Instead,
thanks, body, for making sure that I did that. Yeah,
like maybe you get a bug bite and your body's like, hey, fuck this whole area of your arm. You're going to now just kind of rip it up. You're just going to rip it to pieces. It's not going to help.
Just expose yourself to bacteria.
The bug stuff is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's already too late.
No matter how much you scratch it, you're only causing more problems.
You're just shoving bacteria in that hole now.
Yeah. Now, I guess it does alert you. For example, maybe you've got lice. Maybe you got bed bugs.
Yeah.
You know? You
got a situation you got to handle more broadly than on your own.
Yeah. I wish there was just a better way. you know, of knowing those things than just being itchy.
Well, have you done that thing that where when you have an itch, if you just wait and then it just goes away? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As long as you're not thinking about it. Yeah. If you think about it, it just keeps getting worse.
Yeah. Because sometimes if I'm laying in bed trying to go to sleep or something and like my back randomly itches and I'm just like, I'm not moving. I refuse to move from this position. And then at some point my body's like, fine, and gives up.
Now, what about the sense? What about the sense?
What a sense of overwhelming dread.
Yeah. I don't want that one.
Can we skip that?
A sense of general panic. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah, that'd be good to get.
What about the sense of your tag poking off the back of your t-shirt into your neck?
Oh my God. Yeah, I started just cutting those off my shirts because I hate that.
Fuck that sense. How about a rock in your shoe? That's a sense that I have and I don't like
it. I think we're talking about sensory experiences versus full blown.
But how can you separate those out? Because like the thing is, I know. When there's a rock in my shit.
Specific.
That's a very specific sense.
Yeah, I have the ability to sense that very specific thing is going on.
Yep.
Right? Just how you can sense that your arm is up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or that your eye got poked.
Yep. Right? Yeah, that's not a great sense either, really. Getting like an eyelash in your eye, like, that's fine.
Yeah, so what about like,
it's not gonna hurt anything.
If something is pushing on your eye.
But just a little
bit. What sense is that? Because you know exactly what's happening. Right? It doesn't hurt. Necessarily, depending on how hard, you know, it's
pressure. You can sense pressure.
That's nice. Which I remember when I had my wisdom teeth out and I was all numbed up, but I could feel pressure.
You can hear them.
And you can hear it and you can smell it and you can taste it, right? You got everything except for the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But the pressure was really, it was weird to have pressure decoupled from pain. Yep. I was not a fan of that. I mean, I didn't want the pain.
Oh, yeah, it's weird.
Because
you know it's supposed to hurt like hell.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's not.
The pressure somehow makes you know that that's true.
That kind of makes me sweat a little bit.
Yeah.
You're like, I hate this.
What about the sense of, you know, there's a zit on your head?
Oh, you know
it's
coming?
You know it's there. Mm. No, like, it's there now. Mm, okay. Doesn't hurt at all. And it doesn't feel like anything, right? Like,
but you know it's there.
Like, you know that it's there. You can sense it.
Right. It's like tightness in the skin.
And for some reason.
It's sort of associated itself with your mental image now.
Yeah. And for some reason, when you imagine what you look like from the outside, you just look like one giant zit. When really, it's like a pinprick.
It's not even noticeable.
Very, very slight. So
now you're talking about your sense of self.
Whoa. I don't need to sense that. That's too much.
Mm-hmm. What about that feeling when you suddenly sense your entire house, like when there's a noise at night,
sort
of cracks, and suddenly for some reason you're now aware of all of the ways in which your house could make that noise and whether or not things were that noise. You know what I mean?
Your sense of imminent murder.
I guess, well, you need that one, but not really. It's not fun because it's mostly misfires.
Yeah, I think it's not useful most of the time.
Yeah.
And in the cases where it would have been, it's probably too late.
That's a weird thing that you could, like, you could be in your bed sleeping, you hear a noise. And you know you're living, you know your domicile well enough to literally have a sense of the thing, of how it should be operated. You sort of have extended, you've creepily extended.
You've possessed the house.
Yeah.
You're a house ghost.
Which is also what you do when you drive a car, right? Because you're not thinking about what you're doing.
Well, that's the thing. You start driving. One sense I don't have is where the fuck the back of my car
is. That's true. I'm not even sure where the sides of my car is.
When I go to parallel park, I'm like, oh, God. Yeah.
I was like, I'm right
so
there.
Close. And then I get out and I'm like 8 feet away. We need to fit like three cars in.
We need those cameras. We need to get new cars so we can actually get cameras.
Yeah. Well, apparently nobody has this sense. So we just put cameras in there.
You know, a sense I wish I did have? A sense of accurate volumes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a game changer.
Yeah, we talk – like there's always this question about what sense would you lose, but it's like which sense would you gain?
Yeah,
there's so many good senses out there we don't have.
Yeah, area and volume.
People
just can't. You can't even, like, when someone says, like, oh, yeah, I got, like, you got a cup of water here, you got, like, a jug here. This one's maybe, you know, kind of a trapezoidal shape or a weird pyramid thing. The other one's a regular cup. Which one has more in it? I don't know.
I will
never know. It's a mystery.
And it's always absolutely astonishing. If you take, like, a glass of milk or something or a glass of water and you pour it into a mixing bowl.
Yeah.
You're like, where the fuck did it go?
Yep.
Yeah. It's gone now. Yep. There's just like a tiny film across the bottom.
Yeah, it's sort of like the
back. But then you dump that on the floor and you're like,
how is that possible?
How does it go from being nothing to being a 45-minute cleanup job?
It's like the fact that you have like, what, 30 feet of intestines?
Think
about that.
It's or is it 12?
How are they
it's
in
at least
there?
12. It's a bunch.
You have 45 like miles of nerves.
Yeah.
How'd those get in there?
Out of the what? Yeah.
This is that infinite universe. Somebody did this. And I need to know who's responsible.
Why do they do actually you have infinite miles of nerves because every universe also yeah, has the same 45 miles. So just take 45.
Are those mine though? How do I get them?
You just kind of,
how do I?
I think you just already.
Don't you remember that movie, The One?
Yeah. With
Jet Li.
Did they have a finite number of universes there? And you had to kill every one of them.
You kill every time you kill someone at a parallel, you dies in a parallel universe.
Then you get their power.
And you gain their power. And so there are a few people who realize this.
But there's only like 12 universes or something, I guess, in this section.
Yeah. Also, I feel like the premise is kind of bunk because it's like you only have to do this once. Right? Because like the first time you go into some universe and just shoot yourself, just like shoot the other version of you, you're now double in power.
No, because I think it diffuses over all existing, all still existing people.
Yeah.
Oh, so you got to like kill quite a few.
Yeah, because before
you're strong enough. Yeah,
those ones don't even count because like if there's 20 of you and you kill one, like you just got 5% better.
Because that story is about the
villain. And so did everybody else.
And so did everybody else.
Well, that story's about basically the villain then finding the last one. But they're actually the same power level now.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, right? Mm. Because now he's trying to kill him, but he's like, it's hard because they're godlike.
Yeah.
So that's
the thing.
So you want
happen.
The sense? So you want the ability to
this is
sense.
The problem with parallel universes. We shouldn't allow it.
No. This is too confusing.
They're banned. They're banned from this podcast.
Yeah. I'm glad that we can't sense the nerves of our parallel selves. That would be very problematic.
Yeah.
In many ways.
I wish I could sense whether it is hot or I am hot. You know what I mean? Right like now, all I know is just like, I'm hot. I feel hot.
Right. Is this me?
But yeah, what
right.
I don't know is it hot? Is it hot in this room? Or am I just hot?
Yeah, I think with that, you know, the ability to touch your forehead and tell if it is hot or your hand is hot or cold.
That's impossible.
Because you have to get someone else to touch your forehead.
The thing. Yeah, actually,
but
you know. Actually,
they
you
don't know either because they don't know how
they're
hot
like,
their hand
I don't
is.
Know what.
Yeah, you can't sense temperature. You can only sense temperature differences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you don't know. Yeah, you can't touch your hand to anything and know what the temperature of that thing is. All you know is whether it's hotter or colder than your hand.
Yep.
Which is so dumb, really. what a dumb skill.
I
can tell whether something is warmer or colder than my hand.
Well, I think people tend to think that like, you know, because we have body temperature, right? Mm-hmm. Which is actually a wider range than people think. But also, I think we get the sense that like our body is mostly at that temperature, but not, like it's basically our guts.
Yeah.
Our guts are that temperature.
Your middle.
Our middle guts.
That's why they don't just touch a thermometer to your cheek. They got to really put it in there.
Yeah. Somewhere. Sometimes really
it's
in gotta there.
It's got to get in there
yeah.
to measure the inside of your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder how cold – how cold can a hand get?
Pretty fucking cold. Mine feels like ice right now.
Mine does too.
It's cold. Yeah, all of us apparently work.
The freezing rain is coming.
Here's a question. Our hands are feeling themselves right now.
Right.
To find out how cold they are. But no, of course, we're like, how cold is my hand? So like you make a fist and you kind of feel it, right? But if your whole hand is cold.
Well, you can tell that it's cold.
And then it still feels cold.
If I touch my forehead, all I know is either my forehead is hot or my hand is cold.
Or both.
But maybe neither.
Right.
No, it's got to be. Wait, hold on.
All I know is that like one is warmer than the other.
Yes, right.
But that's all
they
I
could
know.
Both be hot.
They could both be hot or both be cold.
Yeah.
So
there's
I don't
a lot
know.
Of senses there for you.
I think that answers the question.
Senses are all alive. Umami's a pretty good one, though. I feel
that's
good
a good
that.
Sense.
Yeah.
That's one of my top five senses, which I have 600 senses. As we've,
there are many.
As we've discussed. Also, being able to see dead people, obviously, that's a good one.
I don't know if that is a good one.
Yeah, I'd skip that one.
They've got a lot of wisdom.
Do they?
They're dead.
I mean, live people don't have wisdom. Why would dead people?
Because
people killed them for their wisdom.
Just like Jet Li.
Yeah. Next question. Next question comes from Chelosis. Y'all have such a fun and positive energy on the podcast. Do you get gloomy or frustrated as a team ever, like the rest of us? Or do you make a point of keeping the office culture also fun and positive?
Ooh.
I don't think we've ever been
– I've never felt bad
negative
in my life.
Never – only ever felt good things.
Yeah. So I think the
– I'm pretty sure we have some podcast episodes that are clearly a little bit gloomy. We do try to put on our – our best game phase for the podcast.
We put on our clown pants.
Yeah.
And,
you know,
yep.
Everybody's got one.
Mm-hmm.
Just one pant. That's why you got to come together as a team to bring them together into pants.
Yep. Yeah. There are definitely some podcasts where you can feel it a little more. I think, the thing is generally we all have a good time working. So that's I think that's sort of, that's been always true, or just about always true. It's always fun to work on stuff.
Sometimes it's fucking hard.
Yeah, but it's so
fun. To just like,
sometimes it's frustrating.
Yeah, but, you know. It's frustrating. Sometimes it's just a lot. There's just a lot of things happening. Yeah. And it's like being pulled in a lot of directions.
And so I think the sort of negative energy stuff that we generally feel is one of just the uncertainty fact of things.
Or the frustration of an, like with Levelhead. Like, we know we have a stellar game.
It was very good.
And according to the people who have played it.
But not even that. Like,
it's possible that everybody who hasn't played it hates it. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, we've played games before, you know?
Yes.
A lot of them. Like, we know that this is a stellar title. And having it be so hard to then like get other people to even look at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part, which is also true for Crashlands. Like getting people to look at it and being like, please give me your fucking eyeballs.
For a
turn
second.
Them around and make them look at this and experience this thing. And trying just to convince somebody to give it a shot. I think that, to me, that's where basically the entirety of my frustration and worry and everything comes from, is that it would be different if we had something that I thought was bad, because that's a different set of worries and problems.
Like, but well, it's obviously.
It's just particularly frustrating knowing that we've got something good that's worth something, and having the struggle with actually getting anybody to give it a chance to discover that that's true, right?
But yeah. This is something that we've been talking about quite a bit in the studio recently, is basically this question of like, you know, the game's been in early access for quite a long time and we haven't found a large audience for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's something we can do anything about, should worry about, should do anything about.
Does it mean anything?
But also, given that our launch plans are actually huge.
Yeah.
And we already have things locked in that will just do, it'll just do well, mm-hmm. right?
We're so, basically the best situation that we can be for a launch outside of having people actually talk about the game.
Right. Yeah. And so the big question that we keep coming back to is like, yeah, but like, what about right now? You know?
Yeah.
And we've had to kind of learn to just take it in stride and just focus on the launch and just think, okay, that's where we're putting all of our time and energy. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's clearly things that happen in the studio where like things just don't work out sometimes and things are harder.
Yeah. I think a big part of it is when you have a team, the broader perspective is easier to keep when you are personally falling into a negative spiral about some particular thing, because whether it's one of these things or just some particular work project, or you know, someone not emailing you back or any of these things, when you can turn to someone else and be like, oh, this just bummed me out, and they're like, hey, remember the other times when it happened and it didn't matter? Don't worry about it. And
you're
like,
still doesn't matter.
Yeah. Although it does depend on your team, because there are people who just tend towards negativity, and if you get a bunch of those people together,
yes,
then you're just fucked.
Yeah, so. we have a very buoyant office culture.
Yeah,
a lot of.
Well, and I think there's another thing that we do that's maybe a little bit less typical in terms of like a workplace, which is anytime something goes wrong, I don't think I've ever seen it happen. And now, how long have we been making games?
At least one.
7.5 years.
Yeah.
Where something went wrong, and then the conversation turned to who was at fault,
right?
And what to do about that, mm-hmm. right? It's always just been what happened. How do we as a team fix this?
And then how do we keep it from happening again?
Right, and then how do we collectively update our processes to keep it from happening? Because like it just why?
Like, well, we're all learning all the time. I think that's the recognition.
People make mistakes, and if people get the feeling that if they make any mistake, that they're just going to get torn to shreds, you know, then people don't reveal that they've made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And now you have people burying problems, and then it's worse for everybody, you know. So
yeah, the office culture generally is very, very buoyant. Very fun. Everyone's kind of just hanging out most days, basically, it feels like. And so I think that all of that kind of wraps up to make it possible so that we can ride out some of these places where normally you would fall into like a negative kind of a thing, which is really good.
Yeah,
we always get pulled out of pretty quickly. I will say around early access launch of Levelhead.
Yes,
there was a solid like week or two where we were just kind of
handling.
There was a suppressed mood in the office, but even still, I think suppressed relatively, because we were actually still having a good time. Like, we were still enjoying the work. We were still having fun with each other. There was just this kind of like this sense of dread, maybe wish we could lose.
Yeah,
it
was like that didn't happen how it was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
What do we do about it?
Yep.
So you know, it's not all sunshine and ponies.
It's just like it's like Instagram. You know, it's like you're seeing, because we
put on a podcast filter
Yeah,
there's pop, also it's called a pop filter. It keeps us from blasting.
But there's also a reason we don't talk about like podcasts and the fact that the world is on fire very much, right? That, that kind of stuff.
It is though. I mean, it's literally
on fire. But we try to keep this, and we try to bring like when we're bummed about something going on in the studio, or we think that we're worried about things, we try to bring that in here. Or
whatever.
Yeah, we just because a lot of the main goal of this is to be a place where we get to focus on positivity and having fun, but also where. We want people who are listening to have that same experience because, you know, in a lot of ways, the world is a nightmare. And if you can have a haven where you can just –
what if the world was instead a dream?
Exactly.
Yeah, buddy.
All right. Next question comes from Balbus Whispit.
Balbus Whispit.
Balbus Whispit.
Balbus Whispit.
This is a good Harry Potter universe name.
Says
Univore.
I feel like you have to say it that way. You can't like be like Balbus. Like it's
Bulbus Buffon.
Balbus Whispit says, I recently decided to pick up a new instrument. It's been fun learning to play, but I'd be lying to say I wasn't getting antsy at the thought of practicing every day for months, realistically years, to achieve the level of fluency I desire. Like Sam expressed at one point, I tend to get caught up in picking a class and end up never making meaningful progress. How do you stick to it? When is a good time to give up? Help! Praise be, Scotch. That was the last, last addendum.
Yeah, for me, I just don't do those things.
Adam has given up categorically.
Yeah, I really have because I just
gave up on giving up. Wait, on doing things?
On doing things. Okay. Yeah, because I need a. Basically, what I found is that if I've got a team with a goal, right, where there's like an interesting problem that we're all trying to solve together, and I feel like I'm a part of it, and like we're trying to accomplish things, right? Then I'm like all motivated,
that's all
I'm really
you
into
need.
It,
it's fun,
and then it's great, and so I get that from my work at the studio, right? But it's also true for things like I guess I'm very outcome oriented, but in a very I'm not sure what the it's like. So I don't care if I can like do a thing. Well, I want to be able to like have a thing that I made. If that kind of like, I need to do a thing well to get there. But it's like
to be doing it for a good reason.
I need a reason right now. So I hate practice. The whole concept of practice, hate it
because you're just practicing to get better, which you are always doing
just by doing all things, the time. Right? So I tend to gravitate towards, which is why I like programming so much. It's like it's a thing that I can already be doing something, right? And every time I'm doing it, I'm also getting better. And so for me, then practice and creation are just the same thing. And so that's. And where I can spend time, like, you know, learning new things about it, but it's all still in service of my moment to moment creating things and making things happen that I think are really interesting. And so going off and doing a new thing where it's like, I just want to be like woodworking or something, which I for a while was dabbling with. It's like a thing that I just like the idea of, right?
Yeah.
Like I cannot make myself do it because something I just like the idea of and that's the end of it. I can't make myself do it.
Yeah. Like, well, what's your end game there?
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it is the going back to that team aspect question, which is something that really the only way that I was able to start practicing art stuff was by getting some accountability systems built in so that I had a reason to be doing it, essentially. Yep.
You need a why.
Yeah, that why can be as simple as, well, I have an assignment due on Tuesday, so that's it.
Yeah.
You know.
And when it comes to music, having a band.
Yeah, having a band. Like
that would be the main thing.
If you want to pick up an instrument,
or
it is
just
hard.
A teacher.
Yeah. But I mean, it is hard to do it by yourself. So again, having, whether it's a friend who's like, oh yeah, like we'll jam on Sundays, for example, which means that by the time the jam comes, you need to, you know, have practiced so you can throw out some chords or do some good stuff, right?
You want to be able to show off.
Yeah. So I think.
Or at least not suck.
So I think really it's a structural thing again, kind of like what we talked about in the last couple episodes, where I think some people I don't know if I've met a person who's able to just like practice for the sake of practicing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there must be people.
I think it might be one of those myths.
But I don't know what that's. I don't know what that means even. You know, like no. Yeah, just what is that?
But I think you seized on it, which is just don't think about it in terms of brute force or willpower or like, oh, it's a personal failing if I can't just. Spontaneously
to learn how to trumpet,
to just whip out the need to learn to trumpet and just do that every day for hours for years with no
there's purpose. No reason to think that you should be able to just do that.
Yeah, I mean, even like if I think about the things that I'm able to do that I learned how to do maybe like when I was in high school or college or whatever, it was always part of a group. It was always part of some kind of structured program.
Or you just had to for some reason.
Yeah, and the one thing that I would consider myself self-taught at is game maker programming. But I had a very explicit purpose to that, and I even like within a few months I had a Kickstarter that I was suddenly obligated to finish this game project, which I, by the way, was completely incapable of finishing. but that didn't stop me from working on it for like 12 hours a day for 10 months, right? And so like I had a thing that I had to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I just did then.
Yeah. So I think what I would do if you're having trouble with the practice aspect of it is actually take a step back and find.
It's not about you. It's about what's around you.
Yeah. So find a structure that you can sort of pop this idea into that actually makes doing it way more meaningful, way more exciting. Mm-hmm. So whether that's like, I have a friend or I can get a teacher for just like 40 minutes a week.
Or you can boot up that Focus Mate.
Yeah. Do Focus Mate. Which that's sort of like a very moment to moment thing, right? Because it's like, I just need to be there for that hour to get this thing done. And I did actually have a guy practice violin while I was doing my thing with Focus Mate one time, which is very funny because I would look over the webcam. He's just like,
yeah. I mean, why not, you know?
And so there's basically a couple different time scales you can work it on. But I think if you're, I think trying, don't beat yourself up about not being motivated to do these things when there's not a good structure in place for it, because it's just,
That's just the thing. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, there's some pieces of it too. I know for me, a lot of it is just there's a loneliness aspect too. Because I don't mind being alone at all. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. But when I'm trying to make myself do something, there's something that suddenly makes me feel like I'm alone. You know? If I am, I don't know what that means.
It's a sense of aloneness.
So if I'm at home, I feel so alone.
It's a struggle, is what it is.
Yeah, because my wife and I both we have pretty independent, like working on stuff at home lives, right? Where she'll be doing her writing stuff, I'll be doing some programming, or whatever. But like, so we're not talking to each other, right? But being in the same space, it just makes it easier to do stuff, right? Yep. And
why do you think people like coming to co-working spaces?
Yeah,
you have to rent a desk. You rent a desk in a crowded place, for like $200 a month.
Yes. Well, I think there's a particular problem with music. If you're trying to like learn an instrument or something, it's like you can't just be next to somebody else, right? Because you're making a lot of
trumpet blast their ear holes off.
And I know it's actually one of the things that anytime I actually have a ukulele at home, which I used to be able to play poorly, but at least to some degree. And I used to sing a lot and all these things. But now every time I think about this, I'm like,
this would bother everyone.
Yeah, I don't want to bother people, you know? And so it's really easy. I think it's a lot harder to get around that weird, like, loneliness aspect of practicing a thing specifically for music.
I think it's kind of like multiplayer games, right? Like there's some games that I've played solo and I'm like, I hate everything about this. And it's terrible. And then you play it with another person and it's like generally a transformative experience. Yeah.
And Minecraft.
Yeah. Both of those games. If you play by yourself, honestly, nothing really sucks until you've played multiplayer.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is like, that's kind of what skills acquisition is to a large degree. Like it's just truthfully, it's just way more, it is way easier and way more fun to do a thing when you're doing it with someone else.
Yep.
It's just kind of like how
it is. It's almost as if we, as human beings, as weird smooth monkeys with no discernible physical prowess, built-in weapons or defense mechanisms of any kind, it's almost as if we need other people in order to succeed.
Be successful, yeah.
And spears.
And spears.
Yeah.
Those are helpful.
Those two things, and you can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So structural problems. Fix your environment.
And get some spears.
Get some spears. People around you. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bart and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to everything that you could ever possibly want.
To also every version of the universe.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, and if you don't go to – every time you click a link, we split the universe.
And here's the thing. You might think to yourself, I'm not going to podcast.bscotch.net. Yes, you are. Yep. Maybe you're not. One of you is.
But the thing is, if it's not you, it's the wrong you. So get over to podcast.bscotch.net. Make yourself be in the right universe.
Make it be you. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.